Hi, this is Cass. Welcome to the Curio Podcast, where two old friends hash out current events, politics, and whatever strikes our fancy. Visit us on Twitter at Podcast Curio. Join our Facebook page. Check out our website, curiopodcast.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening.
I saw those signs that said white men, colored men, white women, colored women, white waiting, colored waiting. As a young child, I tasted the bitter fruits of segregation and racial discrimination, and I didn't like it. I've asked my mother, my father, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, why segregation, why racial discrimination? And they would say, that's the way it is. Don't get in the way, don't get in trouble. But one day in 1955, at the age of 15, in the 10th grade, I heard about Rosa Parks. I heard Dr. King speaking on old radio. The leadership of Dr. King, his words, the action of Rosa Parks inspired me to find a way to get in the way. I got in trouble. It was good trouble. It was necessary trouble. Barbara Lee, Mayor Harris, been getting in trouble. I have the feeling that here today, we're too quiet.
Hi, Kimmy.
Hi, Cass.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Today is July 20-something and 20-not-what? I have no idea what time is anymore.
I don't either.
But Bill Barr testified today.
He did indeed.
And I couldn't bring myself to watch more than 5 minutes of it because fuck his fucking face.
I didn't watch any of it. I figured it was just going to be a nasty freaking shit show of lies and bullshit.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure it was.
I'll read about it later.
So the other thing that's happening currently is that John Lewis's body is laying in state in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. It was in the rotunda for 24 hours, and then they moved it to one of the side viewing areas outside so that regular people could come by and pay their respects. He's the first African-American man to be honored in that way.
Oh, my God.
And I found it very poignant that his body laid in the same spot where Abraham Lincoln's body laid. That's so poignant to me, knowing where he came from and what he's been through, to end up being honored in that way by our government. I thought it was really, really cool.
Yeah, for sure. It was. I did see that on the television machine.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and it was powerful.
All right, so John Lewis died this past week from pancreatic cancer. We mentioned it last week. His body had to go to, it didn't have to go, but they took it back to Alabama, where they took it across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, which people are calling now for it to be renamed after John Lewis, because apparently this Edmund Pettus guy was a white supremacist, so.
Right.
Right, so...
And we're trying to get rid of that. We're trying to get rid of that, honoring those folks.
Those guys.
With monuments and stuff.
Right. And then the body came back to Washington, D.C. to be honored in the way that it was. But I don't know what you know about John Lewis. What do you know about John Lewis? His life?
I don't know a whole lot about his life, Cass.
Well, I do.
Tell me about it!
He grew up on a farm. His parents were sharecroppers. He had several siblings. I want to say like six or seven siblings. And the community that he lived in Alabama, was completely segregated. He was bused very far away from his home to go to a segregated school, which wasn't up to par, obviously. Anywhere he and his family went, segregated. And he didn't understand. And he was always asking his parents, like, why? And they were saying... They basically, his whole life, even after he got elected to Congress, his mother would say, don't create a fuss, be particular, don't speak up, don't get into trouble. So he had the experience of hearing Dr. King speak and being inspired by Rosa Parks and the bus boycott. I mean, he lived there, you know. And when he went to Nashville to go to college, he suddenly was thrust into a civilization that wasn't segregated the way his little town was in Alabama. And it opened his eyes and made him hungry for more. One of the people that he encountered when he was in college was Reverend Lawson, who we heard speak a few months ago.
Yeah.
Reverend Lawson was a teacher, and he learned a lot of his, John Lewis learned a lot of his nonviolent techniques from Reverend Lewis. So Reverend Lewis was instrumental in the lunch counter protests. Do you remember those? So in segregated society, a lot of department stores had like lunch counters. You could go up and buy a sandwich and a soda or whatever. Well, Black people were not allowed to sit there, no matter what. They had to keep walking. They weren't allowed to sit there. So Reverend Lawson and this group of students. So the other thing that Reverend Lawson taught him was that young people were almost always the catalyst for change.
Right.
So he joined the students for, I forget what the name of it is, but it's basically a peaceful civic activism group. And he ended up eventually becoming the chairman. But so he participated in these lunch counter protests, and part of their training, they actually did training as if they were in the army or something, mm-hmm. where they, and they had recorded it. So there's recording of it. They would sit at the lunch counter and other students would verbally accost them, throw things at them, blow smoke in their face, call them every name you can think of. And their job, their only job, was to just sit there. Don't react. Just sit there. So that's how the lunch counter protests, that's how he became involved. And they did get hurt. And he became a leader. And most of the people that knew him at the time say he's not very well spoken. He's not very articulate. But the thing that people love about him is his courage and his passion for what he believes in. Mm-hmm. He always does what's right as far as the things that he believes in for the cause. After the lunch counter protests, they took part in the Freedom Rides in the 60s. And the Freedom Rides started up, I think, in Washington, D.C., and then they were going to travel all through the South. And the idea was to have these buses with white and Black people on them sitting together. Mm-hmm. So each seat had one white person, one Black person. And the buses kept getting attacked, burned, smashed. The people were getting injured. And eventually, the leaders of that protest said, we're done. The Freedom Ride is over. Well, John Lewis and his group of students said, we're going to continue this through Alabama, and we're going to drive into Montgomery. And they got assurances from the governor. No, not the governor. I want to say the president of the United States. Anyway, they had protection. They had a helicopter protection, state troopers, and something else. And they're driving, and they're almost to Montgomery. They're like 10 miles out of Montgomery, and their protection peels away.
Oh my God.
All of a sudden there's nothing there protecting them from these hordes of KKK coming to try and hurt them. They pull into Montgomery, and he says that the town was completely silent, like a horror movie. Eerie, like a horror movie. There's nothing, no
just
sound.
A ghost town.
There's
just
nobody there. They park the bus. As soon as they park the bus, a mob of hundreds of people come out. There was press there waiting for the bus to arrive because it was a historic thing that was happening. This mob attacks the media. They break their cameras. They ruin their film. They beat them up.
Wow.
And the people on the bus are standing outside of the bus. And John Lewis is their leader. And he says, we're not going to run away. And we're not going to fight back. We're going to just stand here. And every single person that was with him, because of his conviction for what he believed in, said, okay. And they got beat up. So John Lewis's seatmate on the bus was a white dude, and he got his teeth knocked out. That dude. God. John Lewis got a concussion. He got hit over the head with a fruit crate or something. Mm-hmm. Several years later, after he was a congressman, one of the men that was in that mob, who was former KKK, contacted him and said, I've had a change of heart since that day, and I need to apologize to you. And so they met in person and apologized.
Wow.
And he apologized to him. After the Freedom Rides was the Selma March. March from Selma to Montgomery. And what had prompted that was Black people were trying to register to vote in Alabama. And the people at each county level, the registrars, weren't allowing them to, or they were making it very difficult, or they were making them take these ridiculous tests, like, tell me how many jelly beans are in this jar.
Right.
And then wouldn't let them register. There were even moments where people standing in line to register were just beaten by cops for no reason, told to go home, and when they didn't leave, they were beaten. During some scuffle, a Black man was beaten and shot and later died of his wounds. So this march from Selma to Montgomery, which we all think of as being sort of for voting rights, was actually in reaction to this Black man being killed by the state troopers, which I found interesting in the parallel to what's happening today with Black Lives Matter, that he was there in the beginning of that struggle, and he got to see part of this iteration of this struggle. But his organization said, we don't want you taking part in that protest in Selma in 65. And if you do, it's not as a member of this organization. And he felt so strongly about it that he said, that's fine. And when he showed up, somehow he became the leader of this whole protest. There were only 600 people in that protest from Selma to Montgomery. It's such a historic thing. We don't think of it being so small, but he was standing right in front. And the part of the protest was, we're going to walk slowly with intention, silently. And most of them had their hands in their pockets, and they were just walking very slowly. And they started over the bridge. And when they got to sort of the apex of the bridge, all they could see was a sea of blue state troopers.
Oh my God.
And they just kept walking, and they kept walking. And when they got close to the state troopers, they stopped. And John Lewis and the other guy who he was walking with, they said, we should kneel down and start praying right now. Before they could do that, they wanted everybody to, so they were going to, and with the expectation that everybody behind them would. Mm-hmm. Before they could do that, the troopers charged.
My God.
And he got beaten. He got hit in the head. And there's several pictures, and you could see him. He's young, very handsome. He has a white trench coat on. So he stands out in the photos that you can see from that day. Within 3 days of word getting out of what happened and the people getting beaten in Selma, the whole country sort of erupted, like it did for George Floyd. Mm-hmm. In 80 different cities, there were mass protests. Within days of that, Lyndon Johnson went to joint session of Congress, televised, and said, and basically laid out the plan for the Voting Rights Act. And it was signed within a few days. And at the end of his speech, which was very heartfelt, he felt horrible about what was happening and these people getting beaten basically just because they wanted to vote. At the end of his speech, he looked at the camera and said, "We shall overcome." Wow. Which was, I thought, so powerful, because that was him going, "I see you. I acknowledge you. I validate what you're feeling.
We're in this together.
Right.
I got you." Yeah.
I just thought that was interesting. I've always thought of John Lewis as being in the Selma to Montgomery protest, but he's been there since the bus boycott. He was at every single thing. He spoke at the March on Washington. Mm-hmm. He was one of the six leaders of the March on Washington.
His whole life. has been dedicated to
his whole life.
His whole life.
Yeah.
Which I find, I was thinking about that today. How does that happen? That you, at what point do you decide, okay, this is it?
Right.
This is what I'm doing here with my time on Earth. Is it a decision? Is it a compulsion? Is it, you don't even have to think about it, you know? Like,
it sounded for him like it was a combination of things. Being inspired by Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks. Meeting Reverend Lawson when he was at a very impressionable age. When he was feeling like a little more open because he was in a society that wasn't as segregated as his home in Alabama was. Mm-hmm. So it seems like he had a combination of wondering why he was living a segregated life and not really allowed to vote. And then meeting people who were like, hey, and all of the people that he was meeting were nonviolent.
Right.
And that was their whole thing. Like, mm-hmm. they will encounter violence from the other side, but they were not going to react in that way, which right. I've always thought that all kinds of protest are good, of course, but watching and learning about him and the way that he has been able to bring about change was very inspiring to me about the nonviolent movement. Mm-hmm. There was something else I thought was interesting that you might find interesting. He was the guy responsible for the National African American Museum in Washington, D.C.
Yes. Yay.
And he started in 1986 trying to get that going.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm. And it did not open. Hold on, it's in my notes. It did not open until 2016.
Oh,
he
God.
Worked for 30 years. 30 years.
And it's such an enormous piece of American history. It's, you know, it's a very strong thread in the fabric of our identity
right.
as Americans. Damn.
So I wrote down some ways that John Lewis suggests you get into good trouble. First of all, here's his quote. Get in good trouble, necessary trouble, and redeem the soul of America. Here's the next one. He said this in 2018. Vote always. Your vote always matters. If it didn't, why would some people keep trying to take it away?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
important thing to remember right now.
So he's not an articulate guy, and lots of people have said that, but he seems to get right to the heart of a thing with a few words.
That's articulation to me.
That's exactly. It's not frilly.
No.
But it means a lot. Another thing he really believed in is that you're never too young to make a difference. He was the youngest of the leaders at the March on Washington. He was still in college when he spoke there. He was like 21 or 22. He got up in front of 150,000 people in Washington, D.C. And it was that paralleled what's happening today. The young people are really pushing this movement, the Black Lives Matter movement. And they're pushing the gun safety movement, those kids in Parkland.
I think, and I've heard this from several different places as far as civil rights are concerned, that it's a passing of the baton.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not going to be done in one generation. It's absolutely not. That's been proven.
Right.
I mean, already.
Right.
But the idea that, you know, we need to keep this moving, and the way we do that is to give that to the younger generation. You mm-hmm. hand it over to them and say, here's your responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you find your power. You're going to have to fight, and you're going to have to teach the next generation to fight too.
Right.
Because it's going to take a long time.
Yep. Here's his next thing. Speak truth to power. Speak up, speak out, get in the way. Get a seat at the table. So if there's not a seat for you, make one. Get in there. Get in the way. And he would often say that his mother and his father and his grandparents would always say, like, don't get in the way. Don't speak up.
Right.
Just keep to yourself.
They wanted to keep him safe.
Right. But he became brave by being inspired by these other leaders, by Reverend right. Lawson and others, that he knew that the way to change things would be to put his body on the line, to be courageous enough to do that. I find that very, very inspiring. And one of the last things about him, never give up. And he never did. Never, no. ever, ever. Mm-mm. He got arrested 47, 48 times in his lifetime. The last time was in 2018, I think.
Wow.
He would fight for LGBTQ rights, women's rights, you name it. He was out there telling the people he would get arrested with them. Mm-hmm. He started the sit-in for gun rights after Parkland.
Oh, wow, really?
That was him. The Democrats went to the floor, and he gave a very impassioned speech and sat the fuck down.
That's awesome.
and he was old as fuck.
He's like, look, this is what I do. This is what
That's
I do.
That's what he does.
And to the next generation, this is what you do. Like, this is how it works. This is how you do it.
Wow. I've always had respect for him. He's not one that we learned about in school.
No, we barely learned about any of the civil rights activists in school.
Right.
Just a little tiny bit.
And
not nearly enough.
To think that he was a contemporary of ours and lived in a segregated South, it's mind-blowing. One of his last public appearances was in the newly minted Black Lives Matter Plaza.
Yes, yep.
That was the last time he was seen in public, mm-hmm. standing on a balcony. And to think that he started in the 60s, the March on Washington, and didn't basically have the right to vote.
Right.
To, near the end of his life, seeing that the country was finally catching up with his ideas. Like, we're not catching up. We're not even there yet, but I found the story of his life plays out as the story of America. So there is a new Voting Rights Act in the works that Mitch McConnell won't bring to the floor, and it was called something like HR4 or something, but they have just renamed it the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act.
And McConnell won't bring it to the floor?
What a surprise!
Are you kidding me?
What a surprise!
He's so busy. God, do they have any shred of human decency or any inkling of justice or inclusion or unity, the GOP? None.
No, none.
None.
No. They all paid lip service the day he died.
Except for Trump.
Oh,
he did eventually.
He did eventually, and he did not go to pay his respects to the funeral, which I think is fine. He wasn't welcome there.
No, I heard quite a few people say that it's a good thing he didn't come because nobody wanted him there.
Yeah.
We were watching the news last night, and they announced that Trump was not going or hadn't gone. And Paul goes, "What? What's wrong with him?" And I'm like, "He's a fucking asshole."
Like, my first thought was, his base will not like it if he goes and pays respects.
No. And nobody there would want to see him anyway.
Right. Just like John McCain's funeral. Nobody wanted to see him there.
No. Yeah, he was, what was it? He was too busy. Was that it? He was too busy.
No, he didn't even give an excuse. They asked him if he was going to go pay his respects to John Lewis in the rotunda, and he said, no, I'm not. That was it.
That's it?
So what you're thinking of is that he made up a lie about the Yankees saying that he was going to come throughout the pitch, first
after
pitch.
After Fauci.
Yeah. So he decided he was going to make up a fake story about the Yankees and then disinvited himself. Wait, he canceled on an invite that he never had.
Right.
Saying that he was too busy.
Yeah, fighting coronavirus.
Right.
And then he went golfing.
He went golfing that day, yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was like, I just, God. It's so embarrassing. He's the president of the United States. He's acting like a freaking 12-year-old. He never acts an age above 12. It's usually around 2 or 3. But every once in a while, you know, he hits the middle school years.
So I'm reading Mary Trump's book right now.
Right.
This explains a lot about why he acts this way. In just the very first chapter, you get a very good understanding of why he is stunted at that age.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard bits and pieces about his childhood, which sound horrible. His father was just a terrible man.
Yeah, he was a tyrant.
He was, a tyrant, and he was just loony. He wasn't right in the head.
Well, the mom was really not right in the head. Like,
you don't hear much about her.
No. So I have a very... I'm not finished with it yet, but it won't be too long. But now I'm like, I don't feel sorry for him at all. No. But now I have a better understanding of why he is this way. And I can honestly say I don't think a person like that would ever change. So we have to get rid of him. There's no redeeming him. There's no change of tone.
No.
Media.
Are you listening, Susan Collins? No, he will never change. He gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. Every time he's challenged, he just goes down a notch, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets challenged all the time because he's a freaking nut job.
Did you hear his new thing with the new doctor that he likes? She's a conspiracy theorist, and she thinks that people get inseminated with demon spawn, and politicians are reptiles and other things. There's aliens involved, and...
Whoa.
Apparently he's, like, taking her advice about coronavirus.
Oh, my God. Is she in cahoots with Paula White?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
Just the demon sperm.
I haven't read that far into it.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's been a lot of news coming out lately about, was it him? Somebody was retweeting stuff from a bona fide conspiracy theory website.
Oh, it's him.
It was another senator, too. It's just like, holy cow. Why is this okay? Twitter blocked something he did recently, too.
No, that was Junior.
Was it Junior?
Yeah, but I think Trump had retweeted Junior's tweet, but...
Okay.
Junior, right now, today, has been blocked from Twitter for 24 hours for spreading misinformation about the coronavirus. When will the nightmare end?
Why are they... I just don't get it. And finally, they're like, oh, this is serious. You need to wear a mask. Who was it? McConnell just came out a few days ago and said... We need to take this seriously. We need to practice social distancing and we need to wear our masks. And it's like, dude.
It's been months. 151,000 people have died as of today.
Right. And just now. Oh, we should wear masks.
It's almost like they're doing it on purpose.
And then the, oh my gosh. And then the militia. Now, so there's the federal militia folks that are hitting cities. Seattle, Portland is a major hot spot right now.
They're hitting all kinds of cities, not just those two.
Right, but those are the ones that are in the news.
Those are the ones we're hearing about the most, yeah.
Now there's these little community-based militia that are popping up.
That are facing off with each other.
Right. And they're protecting the monuments and the buildings and stuff with their guns. They're heavily armed. They're all packing. They're all packed up in the back of freaking pickup trucks with their guns driving around.
Well, did you hear? I think it was Austin. There was rival gangs of militia groups, one protecting the Black Lives Matter protesters and one there to kill the Black Lives Matter protesters. Faced off with their assault rifles, both sides.
Were there shots fired?
Yeah, so one of the guys that was protecting the Black Lives Matter, a car pulled up and tried to, like, go through the crowd, and he, stopped the car or something and, like, yelled at the guy and, like, showed him his gun, like, you can't come through here, basically. And that guy left... came back and shot that dude, killed him.
Oh, my God.
And got out of there. The police said he was completely justified and let him go. That man is free.
Oh, my God.
That was in Texas. That man is free.
Holy hell.
So he's inflamed people. The people are acting crazy like he wants them to. And all the cities are going to burst into flames. It's exactly what they want.
Yes, they want a civil war.
Yeah.
They definitely want a civil war.
So I was re-inspired by John Lewis thinking, Kimmy and I could just go and sit down. Just go do a sit-in somewhere.
Yeah.
Silent sit-in.
Yep.
No words. No nothing. Just sit there.
Just sit.
So.
We better wear helmets, though. God. It's history's rhyming again.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous that we can't learn from these things.
Yeah.
I guess we do momentarily, and then the pendulum swings back, and we've got to relive it again, and it's just ridiculous.
But really, if you get a chance, look into some John Lewis information, because his life, the trajectory of his life, matches perfectly with the trajectory of our country, and there are a lot of parallels between the civil rights movement in the 60s and what's happening today.
Right.
And people are I'm a little heartened because people are becoming more courageous. Yeah. Where you and I have been talking about, like, you know, people are soft and they're sitting in their houses and they're watching TV and they've never had to sacrifice anything. I feel like now it's starting to click. That this democracy that we have is an experiment and we do have to fight if we want to keep it.
Right.
In whatever way that shape or form that takes for you. If you want to sit, if you want to write letters, if you want to get on the streets with your helmet on, do it.
Right.
But we can't just sit idly by and imagine that this democracy is going to survive without us if we're not breathing life into it.
Right. Exactly.
And for God fucking sakes, vote. Yes. Oh my God.
Please vote. And you're going to have to fight for that, too. We just got our ballots. Everybody gets a mail-in ballot in California, and they just came. We just got them.
You didn't get just the information sheet saying that they're coming? That's what we got.
Oh, maybe that was it.
It's like a confirmation that you still live there, that it doesn't get returned back.
Okay.
So that's them, like, setting the stage so that everybody in California can just mail their ballots in. And also, I'm not getting mail very often anymore, so send your ballot in early.
The mail has been really, really unpredictable. There are days we don't get mail at all.
Yeah, us too.
There are packages sitting in distribution
centers, yeah.
Yes, all over the place. So I believe you can even walk your ballot in.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You can take it to a polling place and drop it off.
They're planning on and having more of those drop-off bins everywhere. They want to make it as easy as possible in California to vote. If you live somewhere else, make plans now. Do it now.
Take the day off work.
Figure it out.
I was going to, I'm going to talk to my husband about closing up for the day.
Oh, giving his employees the day off.
Hey, here's a day off. Go vote.
That's a thing your husband can do to help democracy. You should frame it that way.
Yeah.
Here's a quote by John Lewis about the vote. The most powerful nonviolent tool we have in a democratic society. It's precious, almost sacred. So it's the same with the women suffragettes. They suffered. They fought. Some of them died. They lost their children. They lost their employment. They lost their husbands. So that we, their daughters, could vote. Mm-hmm. John Lewis got beat so many times. He got arrested 47, 48 times. He served his whole life trying to get equal rights for everybody and to make sure that everyone could vote. Let's not take this for granted. It is sacred.
It is. And it's not an entitlement. We have to fight for it.
Right.
And it's something that it's a very precious thing is our vote.
Don't waste it.
Don't waste it. And don't listen to the freaking polls. That's another thing. I get afraid that people are going to be like, oh, Biden's got it in the bag. Whatever.
I don't need to bother.
I'm not going down there. No.
If you are listening to our voices right now and you live in the United States of America where the world is burning and you don't vote, we will come to your house and make faces at you.
We will sit on your lawn.
We will do a sit on. We will do a sit on.
We will do a sit on and we might even sing while we're sitting on.
We will make fun of you to your neighbors. How about that?
Also, if you don't vote, it's on you.
Also, if you don't vote, Donald Trump could become president again.
And it's the easiest darn thing to do. Well, maybe
not in Georgia.
Maybe not that easy, but it's easier than marching. It's easier than getting whacked over the head and having your skull cracked open. It's easier than being thrown in jail. It's easier than losing your family, your children. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
It's easier than a root canal.
Yes.
It's easier than going to the fucking grocery store right now.
Holy moly. That's the truth. Just freaking vote.
Do it.
But not for Donald Trump, please.
If you vote and you send us a picture of you voting or your sticker that says you voted, we'll send you some Curio Podcast swag. How about that? And if you're from somewhere else around the world, we'll send you some. If our postal service is still working by then.
Right.
We don't know. Everything's falling apart. Help us. Please send the UN. We need help.
Oh, my gosh.
Any final thoughts, Kimmy?
No.
No? That's it?
No.
Are you officially in menopause yet?
No, I've got like 28 more days.
Oh, are you doing?
I think this is my last phantom cycle.
You're having symptoms?
It's been really, really weird and wacky. I've had insomnia.
Yeah.
I've been exhausted.
Oh.
Like when you're pregnant, when you're newly pregnant, exhausted. Like,
yeah.
I can't think straight. I am one hot fucking mess.
Literally hot.
Yes.
Like burning from the inside out, hot, flashy mess.
Yes. The hot, flat. Oh my God. I'm ready to be done.
Someday they'll invent a switch. Here's my final throat. My final throat.
Or your final threat.
We're not even drinking tonight.
No.
Here's my final threat. You better vote, motherfuckers. All right. Bye.
Well, there's the title. Over the edge, sicker than you planned. So please waste my time. I'll gladly Curio say Podcast is a Porch Swing production. Big thanks to all of our contributors and special guests. For more info, please visit Twitter at Podcast Curio, Curio Podcast on Facebook, and CurioPodcast.org. And remember, Curio Podcast loves you.